Penguin Random House Audio presents The Sweetest Revenge by Lizzie Dent, read for you by Brittany Presley. For Nikki Sunderland, XX. Chapter 1.
We need to talk.
Nothing good ever comes after that sentence. Nothing. All I can think is, whatever happens, do not let him talk to you about anything until you're on that fucking train. You need to get ready, I say lightly, nodding toward the dry cleaning bag slung over his bed. I picked up your suit and there's a coffee waiting for you. Or a whiskey, whichever you need. I can see the seriousness in his dark brown eyes as he remains fixed on me. He lifts his hand to his face and rubs his freshly shaved chin.
Okay, but then we need to talk.
For now, it's enough to know we're still going to get the train. But I'm anxious. Work? Incurable disease? Us? My phone buzzes again and I leap to the bed to free it from its charger. Amy, you better be on top of Bradley fucking Cooper, shouts Ruth, my cousin and the bride-to-be. The phone is then handed to my mother, who continues the dressing down. Everyone's waiting for you, Amy. And I'm the one who is supposed to keep everyone waiting, shouts Ruth in the background. I'm the fucking bride. I'm so sorry, Mom. Chris just got home. He had a meeting. I'm not sure a meeting is more important than your cousin's wedding. I'm not going to miss it, I shout, impatient now. I'm standing here in the damn dress. The train leaves in 45 minutes. This guy can't drive you both in his fancy car, she says. I had already made the grave error of mentioning his new car. In my concern, they might not like Chris. I'd oversold him and turned him into a rich asshole. The Uber has been ordered, I reply. I hang up the phone and quickly order an Uber. Moments later, Chris, who seems to be moving at a glacial pace, emerges from the bathroom in a pale blue linen suit and cream shirt. No tie. I melt like butter at the sight of him. He always looks so put together, so clean somehow. But I say playfully, we're going to Long Island, not the Bahamas. My massive family will all be in off-the-rack suits and ties, and Chris is going to stand out like a walking GQ cover.
I thought it was going to match you, but I'm afraid Tom Ford doesn't do that shade of virgin blue,
he says teasingly, as I fiddle with the top of the bridesmaid dress, trying to squeeze a little cleavage out of the modest neckline.
Although, it has improved with you in it.
He smiles flirtatiously at me. Chris always knows how to weaken me. A single raised eyebrow can have my pants off in a whip. I glance down at the dress. Ruth hadn't done a terrible job with the design, but it did come off a little polygamist Mormon for my taste. Only polyester taffeta can deliver this kind of shine, I say, grinning at him. But I'm anxious. He seems to sense this and pulls me close, delivering a heavy kiss on my lips, crushing the skirt of my dress. I want to collapse into him. Mind the gown, I say instead, pushing him back.
I do really need to talk to you,
he says in that crisp, upbeat business tone I was used to hearing in the boardroom at work. Sexy, strong, capable. I love you, I reply, but this is the first time you're going to meet my family, and they're going to be at their most insane, so let's talk later. Chris is an only child, and he grew up in Providence, and although I've never been there, nor have I met his parents, I can just imagine his quiet, picket-fenced cul-de-sac with a boat in the driveway and an organized recycling area. And his parents, slim, refined, and classy, but also slightly terrifying because what did they really think? My family, on the other hand, is like walking into a room full of kindergartners on a sugar high, but with 6-foot men and beer. Within 30 seconds of arrival, my brother Floyd will give Chris an excruciating nickname. One that pierces the very heart of who Chris is. It will exemplify a truly extraordinary ability to read people, and in some ways is a superpower. But all I will hear is my brother calling my boyfriend the little stinger because he's only 5'9" and a wasp.
Amy, we need to talk now, he replies. And then after a beat of staring at me in a way that makes me stiffen with unease, he adds,
"We're not going ahead with the series, Amy."
"What do you mean we're not going ahead with the series?" I shift to autopilot, picking up my overnight bag and moving toward the front door. I push it open and walk down the stairs, then out onto a stoop and the tree-lined street. "The Uber is here," I call to hurry him along, my eyes on his brand new silver Audi, which could get us there in half the time and hassle. He's moving so slowly. Or am I running? I feel like I'm running. I feel like I'm running away from what he's telling me, as though if I stay a few feet ahead, the information will not catch up with me.
"The content board met, and that was the decision,"
he says as we slide into the back seat of the car. "I see," I reply. The gravity of this situation too overwhelming to fully accept or even acknowledge. I swallow a scream. It can't be. It's a mistake. It's a temporary setback. I have been working on The Darkening Web for as long as I've been at Wolf Studios. It's a crime series set between Palo Alto and Pebble Beach in Northern California, in the creepy underbelly of Silicon Valley, pitched as Big Little Lies meets Ozark with a Black Mirror twist. It's 4 years of my blood, sweat, and tears. In TV development, having a show fall down before being greenlit is all part of the game. It's happened a dozen times in my career. But this one that I adored, was meant to fly. This was my moment. I had the most incredible showrunner poised to sign on. A brilliant young writer had drafted a pilot script described by the VP of development as a game changer. All it needed was the green light team to say yes, and we would be moving to pitch and hopefully pilot. This was the meeting that had been important enough to stay for. The meeting that I missed my cousin's rehearsal dinner for. The meeting where, Chris promised, he would finally get the green light for my show. As we pull up to Atlantic Terminal, Chris is still trying to get me to talk about it. "I can't," I repeat for the 100th time, pulling away from his pitying arm, which he's trying to drape around my shoulders. "I wish you'd waited to tell me."
"I just want you to understand why I voted."
"You voted," I say, jumping out of the car, tugging him toward the building. "You voted to greenlight it because it's brilliant and because you said you would."
"I didn't vote for it," he says, frowning.
"Sorry? Did I mishear?" I say, spinning around to face him.
"Amy, I'm your boss. That's a reality," he says, dropping his canvas weekender to the sidewalk. He puts his hands on my shoulders, squeezing me lightly. "Today we become official. I'm meeting your family, and people at work are starting to figure it out."
"What does this have to do with The Darkening Web?" I ask, although I suspect I know the answer.
"I can't be seen to be favoring my girlfriend,"
he says, and I cringe. "Your girlfriend? I was a development executive first," I say. "A pretty fucking good one, too."
"You understand, though,"
he asks, shaking out his hand so his stupid, expensive vintage watch slides down his wrist. Then he checks the time and looks at me with a great deal of discomfort.
"I was worried about the blowback. It's highly unprofessional what we're doing. I can't be fucking you and then elevating your work. It looks terrible."
I raise my hands to my face. "Oh my God," I say finally. "Oh my God. 4 years of my work. 4 years!
"We talked about this," he says impatiently. "I explained to you that it would be problematic. I gave you options."
"You gave me the option to let you pitch it as yours. I thought you were joking." Chris shrugs at this.
"It made the most sense. That way no one thinks I've made a decision with my dick. And your project can be viewed without bias."
"But it's mine," I say, stamping my heeled foot as I say it.
"Of course it is, to everyone else. It would have only been the network heads who would have thought otherwise."
I cannot make sense of what he is saying to me. I just keep shaking my head in disbelief.
"I thought you'd want to keep exploring whatever this is becoming," he says, frantically motioning between the two of us. "I can't greenlight a potentially $50 million per season show for my girlfriend. Can you not see this?
I thought you would get it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?